Today, I am so excited to welcome Irving Bitesh to the podcast. Irving is a serial entrepreneur and friend who has built businesses in both travel and tech, despite having absolutely no formal experience in either when he started. His story is one of incredible resilience, passion, and the power of trusting your gut. If you're someone who's just kind of in a rut right now, trying to figure out whether where to take your business or your career next, he is someone you're definitely going to want to listen to. From selling a watch to pay rent in the early days of his business, to following the belief that nothing will be handed to you, Irving's story is one to definitely learn from. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Office Hours. I'll be honest, I have a favor to ask of you though. I'm truly loving putting together these amazing guests and coming up with questions for them. But the only way we'll be able to continue getting great people and stories is if other people know about us too. So, do you mind doing me a favor? Do you mind hitting subscribe and then rating this podcast wherever you're listening to it? It would really, really help us out.
Alrighty, we're back for another episode of Office Hours, and this time we're joined by the CEO and founder of Sion, Irving Bitesh. Irving, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Grace. Thank you, Grace. Definitely honored that you thought of me to come on here. I know we've been gotten close over the years, so it's great chance to just hang out with you for a little.
I know this is, we have way too many of these conversations. So for everyone that's going to be listening to this, you could just join in on one of our, you know, monthly phone calls that we tend to have about some random topic.
I hope this recorded one is as good as our real ones.
Well, to give some context to anyone listening in, Irving is the founder of Sion. Sion is an incredible invoicing commission tracking tool for the travel and hospitality industry. I'll let you give the deep dive into what it is, but it's a fantastic startup that he's built over the last 5 or so years now. He prior to that had built a company called IBC Private, which was, and still very much is, an incredible high-end travel agency and concierge company. He clearly has built two very successful businesses and has a quite an interesting story as to why he even ended up in this industry that I can't wait to dig into. But I figured that we'd start off with basically my research into you, which is very hard to do because you don't have a very much of a presence online. And so doing research and trying to find some questions to chat with you about, I had to lean a lot on what we know about each other, but I felt like that was a question in and of itself. This is a very flashy industry, travel agency work, being a travel advisor tends to require a lot of a social media presence. And so I'm curious, and I wanted to dig into, you know, being that you're such an experienced person, how would you describe yourself to someone who's never met you?
That's a good question. Probably someone who wouldn't enjoy answering a question like this, but, you know, I guess I could answer it in a way that how at least I look at myself or hope people who know me think of me. But the first thing that always comes to mind is I love food. So that's definitely something as a good foundation to anyone who's close with me knows that I like food. But I think one of the things is, you know, someone who tries to be happy or joyful, like someone who naturally has a smile on their face. I think that's something I go out of my way to do. I know, you know, everything in life is pretty tough. So I try to be happy. I think I'm pretty blunt, straightforward. I don't like too much to BS. So a lot of telling people what I think, sort of no filter. I'm definitely passionate about what I do. I think you can see in the type of businesses that I was interested in, always like caring about people. I think I'm very, you know, over the top passionate, and whatever I'm focusing on, whether it's work or family, just a lot of attention to detail. I'm very, aware, a little too much aware sometimes. And also like a worrier a little bit, because I think when you're also, you know, always focused or paying attention to things, that means you're always, you know, cognizant of what could go right, what could go wrong. So I think I'm always on high alert. I'm not like diagnosed with ADD, but I'm like ADD. I can't sit still. I have trouble sitting in any place for a long time. I'm a competitive person. I think I'm spoiled. That's for sure.
Spoiled.
How am I spoiled? I mean, I think, you know, being the firstborn child, I think just the typical definition of spoiled was just, being a firstborn, my parents, same way I did with my firstborn kids, not saying no to them, but then obviously then being in the luxury travel business, they spoil you even more. So that's something that's definitely true about me. And I think I'm trustworthy. I think people trust me to either confide in me or just trust me that I'm going to tell them how I truly feel, for better or worse. The last thing I would say that you sort of led into in the beginning was I'm definitely a private person. I think I like my space. There was a time, and maybe, who knows, maybe we'll dig into this a bit later in the podcast, but I definitely, coming from a place in my life where I feel like I cared about other people so much, I've sort of taken the opposite approach as I sort of grown up, as me and my friends like to say, and I go out of my way to sort of have privacy. So I think that's really important to me.
Some of my favorite characteristics that you mentioned that is so true that I think are going to be helpful in explaining you as we talk a little bit more about just the way you think about the world. Absolutely driven. One of the most intense people I've ever met, but in the best way possible.
Thank you.
Truly in one of the best ways possible. And you definitely lean in and zoom into certain specific things. But then also you're incredibly trustworthy. I've called you, as we already alluded to, many, many times to talk about business or life. And I think you're really upfront and honest about the way that you see things. So, I want to, before we even jump into how that turned you into a person and how we even got to who you are now, I want to talk about the early days of your career. Because frankly, not much of it is online. I know a little bit from talking to you, but I don't think most people know anything about who you were before you even got to your first company.
Yep. So my main job, I guess, before I even got into travel at all, was working for a family business, and then partially not for a family business, but all in the fashion apparel industry. So probably mostly sales. There were other things involved, but I made a good living. I had a good opportunity. I think it was primarily a sales job. I think at that time, there wasn't a lot of passion in what I did. So I think, I don't think that's the case for everyone, or even for some people. Sometimes money could be a huge motivating factor. That really wasn't something for me. But I was definitely going through the motions at that time. But yeah, I had a sales job. There really isn't much to say about it. I think looking back, I would say that work wasn't a priority for me at that time. So if we redid that over again, maybe we're having a different conversation now. But there were definitely things subconsciously I probably learned during that time, which is that when you're in a wholesale apparel company, there are so many pieces that need to work together. So both understanding certain, the fashion trends that are out there, what these buyers are expecting, not just getting new or big sales, but also making sure that they perform, because anyone could have luck, or, even if it's not luck, get a big first order. But it's all about that repeat business. And that's something I've taken on into, the other businesses that I had, is that learning that the excitement is not getting the order, getting the deal. It's about, if it doesn't perform well, then it's almost like false hope. It's almost worse that you got that, right? Because it ruins your reputation and things like that. So, and then obviously needing to coordinate between making sure the buyers are happy, it performed well, working with the design team, working with the manufacturers, the shipping of the product. So being able to see that, I guess looking back, even for my time being a travel agent, understanding that you need to rely on so many other people was a subconscious lesson I learned at that time, even though I was probably the most miserable years of my life when I was working in sales in the apparel industry.
Well, you just teed it up for me perfectly. I know that there was a specific event that you did in your 20s and kind of a period of time. You were going through some bigger life changes that really changed a lot of your personality into who you are now. Can you tell us a bit about your experience with planning your honeymoon and ultimately going to UPW?
Yeah, totally. So obviously, I knew that I was not happy in work, but I think it was so much deeper than that. And I'm sorry, you probably want me to get deep on here, but sorry if I get a little too deep. But really, I was at a point in my life, I was one of those people that I was not I was probably opposite of the person that you know since we met. Like, I was not highly motivated at all. I was someone who didn't take school seriously. And even after school, I was someone that just had such a unhealthy mindset. I think I was just my main, you know, one of the things that I believe in that the most important things are what your priorities are and basically what you focus on or what people, what you do on a daily basis, you can see someone's priorities. My priorities until I was in my early-ish 20s, even creeping into my mid-20s, was my social life. And I'm unapologetic about that. Just like looking back, I'm like the biggest loser, but I thought it was so cool at the time. And that was my priority. Going out with my friends, having fun. Work was just something I needed to do in the day. Hopefully, I made enough money to be able to enjoy myself. But really, that was my priority. And it wasn't just that my priority was my social life. Like, I really never thought from a motivating standpoint. I just felt like I was someone who let life happen to me. Like, this is what happens next. And you just go through the motions, like, so almost like numbed out, just going through life, absolutely numbed out. So what happened was I sort of got an inkling of something that I was passionate about for the first time when I went on my honeymoon with my wife. So I was lucky enough to meet my wife, even though I was, you know, maybe not, didn't have the best priorities. But when we got married, just a little more background was I was always that one person, just naturally, for whatever reasons. Everyone has that friend who puts everything together. I was the guy, the planner. As we're going somewhere, I'm anticipatory. That's probably one of, one of the things about myself I didn't mention, but just, you know, seeing things before they happen. I'm good at feeling a problem before it even exists. So I was very hands-on on my honeymoon, hired a travel agent. Long story short, it's not exciting details. I put together a sick honeymoon. I thought I outworked my travel agent. We used someone who was like really recommended as like a big deal, like a good person. And I just felt, not only did I enjoy doing it, like I would have done that for free. I felt like I did a better job. And that was like a little bit of a confidence boost. And when I came back, I was like, you know, this is something interesting. And I just spent like 6 months just researching on my own, just about travel agents and how I would be good. And I always had a good network of people. I was lucky in my like socialite life to rub shoulders with some big spenders and people like that. So I had a good network to leverage. And I was just, you know, I think I came up with an idea that was unique for a travel agency. In my research, I didn't love that, you know, travel agents could easily be used, right? Like they could call them, ask them a bunch of questions, go do something on their own. There was nothing binding. There was a lot of wasted time. And I felt like because I care so much about people and like I care so much about doing a good job for them and them having a successful trip if I were to do it, that my time was very valuable. So really the idea that I came up with, it wasn't even travel to begin with. Travel was like 20% of what I wanted to offer, but I almost wanted to be like an ace up someone's sleeve. It was from day one, it was a membership program where we helped manage their entire life outside of work, whether they needed a driver, they needed to get into a nightclub, a dinner reservation, go on a trip. So I sort of just wanted to be sort of a lifestyle concierge for people that they paid me for my time. But it wasn't until, and this is probably what you were alluding to because we spoke about it numerous times, Tony Robbins, how cliche is that? Tony Robbins changed my life. I had a friend of mine who came back, who knew me really well, knew my personality. He's like, Irving, you need to go. You need to come with me to UPW. It's his flagship event, Unleash the Power Within. And going to Tony Robbins changed my life.
So tell me why. Because clearly you went to this event, had an amazing experience, and it changed your life. But
what happened
what
there?
The revelation? Like what happened?
All right. So I'll tell you a few things. So first off, again, keep in mind, at that time, I'm someone just going through motions in my life and thinking about Tony Robbins. I literally needed to be dragged there, begged to go. And when you got there, like literally looking around people felt like it was like a cult. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? Am I allowed to curse on here? But you know, like could not believe it. So, you know, my friend kept telling me, dude, go sit by yourself. Don't sit next to me. You got to like really zone in. And I think one of the things that is amazing about Tony, before I get to like the things that really stick with me to this day. But first off, so many of the things he tells you, you know already. he is so good about not telling you anything revolutionary. It's all in the delivery, right? It's all in saying it in a way. So I think before I get into what he talks about, what makes him special is the delivery and sort of the, format of it. And this is one of the things he preaches, is that you need to immerse yourself in something to do it. Like if I just, someone listens to this podcast and I give a few nuggets that I learned from Tony, you know, if you're not immersing yourself in it and pounding it into yourself over and over again in like a dramatic way, he does things that make you say certain things with energy and over 4 days over and over and drills it into you. So it actually leaves some scar tissue with you when you're there. And it's not just something like, you know, you're scrolling and you read a tweet and it's like, oh my God, that's such a good idea for my business, until you see the next one and then you forgot you ever saw it, right? So it's full immersion. And there's no doubt it works from a psychological standpoint. But being at where I was, and I think probably a lot of people in the audience where you're just going through the motions, what really stood out to me was how you have to like just stop making excuses in life, right? That it actually shifted my total mindset to realize that no one gives a shit about you, about yourself, other than yourself. Like they do, you think you do. There's maybe like a handful of people on earth that really, like, if God forbid you died tomorrow, that like in a week from now would even care, right? So also, you know, just realizing that it's your life, don't waste it. I think his main message, if I were to say one, is really about gratitude and just realizing how lucky we are and how, no matter what situation you're in, I remember he even starts off the seminar by talking about how like, oh, you're all here. Think about like how much happier you are than someone who's like in traffic coming in here, or someone who got into an accident. Like there's always something worse that someone else is, basically there's a billion people on earth that would trade their position for yours in a second, and really hitting that home. So I think once you're in life, when you're operating from a place of gratitude, you're already beating the competition, because he always says like, it's impossible to be grateful and angry at the same time. It's like a physical impossibility, right? So like, try to always remind yourself of just how lucky you are and how many, you know, just to being grateful. How fragile life is, so sort of connected to the same thing, and realizing that like life is so short, like really, like, do you want to waste time here, like going through those motions and really making the most of it? And I think if you ask most people that have gone to his seminar, one of the most powerful things, if you really allow yourself to like, you know, do it full force, is, you know, he has you close your eyes and he takes you through truly picturing your life if you don't change anything 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years, 30, 40. And you really at a point start to really feel that pain, like, holy shit, like I will be so pissed if that really is what my life ends up being like. And then he does the opposite. And if you do all the things like over the course of the few days that you know you want to do, and that you're, for whatever reason, something's holding you back or your own limiting beliefs, that's a big thing that he talks about. A few more I'll touch on. Concept of burning the boats is huge. So when you do something, burn the fucking boats. He says that all the time. Like,
wait, we need to dig into this more, because my dad also, this is partly why I asked you, my dad went to a Tony Robbins seminar when he was in his early 20s. And till this day, that's basically what he raised me on, is most of what he learned in that seminar. And he went with my mother as well. So many things came out of that. And he told me that story about burning the boats without even knowing what it was connected to. So you need to tell that story.
Yeah, so burning the boats, he gives an example of, I forget who it was. I don't know if it was Napoleon or someone, but there's like a famous story in history where they needed to go and take an island. They needed to go take an island. And, you know, people were nervous and like half all in, half-assing it. And what the general or the leader did was he had the soldiers burn all the boats so that they had no choice. It was either die or take the island. And it's just an amazing metaphor in life that, you know, and it's something there's not a day that goes by that I don't, especially when you have to make critical decisions in a company and things like that, or even in your personal life, is that like, if you want to do something, the best to put yourself in the best position to succeed is to not give yourself another option. And like, you know, obviously there's a lot of paths to life. I think one of the things that is so funny in life, if you observe, is that all these people with clout who people listen to, that either have made a lot of money or been successful for this or that, all of a sudden, when they look back on their life, if they have any notoriety, now all of a sudden they're geniuses, right? But so there are other arguments to say, you know, what's your plan to go to college and then do what, and what's your plan B? This is basically saying, fuck your plan B. There's no plan B. Plan B is only going to hurt plan A. So, so that's burning the boats. Another thing also is I think, you know, being naturally a very emotional person, we always think when something bad happens in our life that it's catastrophic. So he has this big thing of saying, when you're like evaluating anything, say it how it is. Don't make it worse than it is. Don't make it better than it is. But just say how it is. Take the emotion out of it. And he always gave this example about how like a plastic surgeon, right? Women spend tens and hundreds and millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars to make themselves look good. So what are they doing? They're taking someone who, you know, for lack of a better term, is maybe ugly and making them beautiful. But you would think, what does that mean? That a plastic surgeon's going in there and completely butchering someone's face to make them look completely different. But it's not. A plastic surgeon, what do? It's like a quarter centimeter here, a quarter centimeter there, a quarter centimeter there. And all of a sudden, someone looks completely different. So that's also realizing, like, when you're struggling in something or you think you're so far away from your goal, but it's a small change here. And a lot of times it's just taking that baby step in a direction that you were pushing off or didn't want to do, that you just, you realize that, like, and this is actually a perfect segue into like my favorite thing Tony says, is that this saying that life is not happening to you, it's happening for you, right? So when you realize that, and you realize that when you do take these small little steps or these small efforts into something that matters to you or you want, like the universe finds a way in like helping you. Right. So I think, I think that's a real important one. That's a big one for me, is really that life is happening for you. And if people start thinking about that, there comes the gratitude, there comes the confidence, there comes so many things. Just take action and realizing that, you know, everyone wants to live in a place of certainty, and there's certainty and uncertainty in life. And, the only time someone doesn't have problems is when they're dead. So really what you want to do, he always asks, this is my last Tony thing, because I could take up your whole episode with Tony. He means so much to me.
This is why I had to ask you about it.
He means so much to me. He talks about just like problems, right? And about, he asks, why is everyone here? And everyone gives a vague answer, like to be happy, right? Happy, I want happy. It's happiness in life. Great. What does happiness mean, right? And he breaks that down pretty early, and he's like, anyone who says like, I don't want to have problems, you will always have problems. He says, the only time you're not going to have problems is when you're dead, no matter who you are. What you want to do is trade in your bad problems for better problems, right? And sort of just realizing that in order to be happy, you do need to live and get comfortable with uncertainty. And I think so many people are just not happy unless they have certainty. So I think that's one of the things that to this day I struggle with a lot, is, you know, I'm a controlling person. And I think I implement so many things I learned from Tony, and they've changed my life. I think I'm one of the happiest people I know, but and in any circumstances. So that's one of the things I'm proud of. But I think the hardest thing is the uncertainty. It's still something I really struggle with, is just, I try, but does it really resonate sometimes? No, you know, it's hard.
The irony being, of course, you chose one of the most uncertain career paths.
Correct.
Anyone That's correct. Could take. So why in the world did you take something that's so innately not, you know, comforting right. to you, and then well, go yeah. into your business?
Well, I guess I was initially going to say that, again, the initial concept of the business when I started it wasn't primarily travel. Like, for some reason, I did so much groundwork before starting the company and having nightclub relationships and all this stuff. And I ended up being like the smallest part of my business. But anyway, in general, why? I think it goes back to the honeymoon. I really enjoyed it. I think travel means so much to people. And it's going to be so cheesy, but really, like, when you, and I'm sure a lot of your followers will be from travel, and they'll all agree with me, like, there is something special about impacting someone's personal life. And it's like, I got into corporate travel, I got into leisure, which is like, these trips mean so much to people. And when you could, people work so hard, when you could put together something that's really memorable for them. And same thing, you know, our company specializes in events and impossible dinner reservations and, you know, access to things that aren't accessible. You know, when you just come through for someone and someone feels like, wow, you know, that feeling is awesome. So I think, you know, I was just, you know, I got a high off of that. I got a high off of that feeling of making people happy. You know, it's really an incredible feeling helping people. So I think that's why most people get into it in the travel industry. They taste that on some level. And coming from a different industry, one of the reasons I hated the apparel business so much is because all you did all day long, these buyers at Bloomingdale's, Macy's, Saks, whoever we were dealing with, like, they hold all the power in their pen when they're writing these orders. So your whole job was just kissing ass all day. So you're dealing with people, you're not genuine. You're dealing with people who are mean. They know they're powerful. It just, the dynamic was a lot of miserable people working in that industry where you go to travel and it's like, if you're in hospitality in general, then it's at least you're somewhat of a hospitable person, right? So that means like there are some horrible people in travel, but most of the people you encounter are hospitable and care about people. So I think, you know, well over 85-90% of my interactions from 10-11 years ago when I got into this industry is mostly just people who all like coming through for people, helping people, putting a smile on their face. And it just makes working hard every day easier.
Well, given how much you love the business, why did you decide to ultimately step away? And I know your brother now runs the business. Like, what was that transition for you? Why did you decide to change what you're now doing?
That's a great question. Looking back, I don't even know if I remember. It all happened so quickly. But I think I just felt a challenge, I guess. And not to say I wasn't challenged in my travel business, because it always keeps you honest. You know, when needing to tend to sort of very needy people, rightfully so. No knock on the needy people. We love you. But I think when I started, I thought there was a path for me to make a good living. And I did, thank God. I think I have no complaints. I had a healthy travel business and my brother took it to another level. So kudos to Teddy. But what I was not expecting was not easily just receiving the money you earned. So I know this, you know, talk is less about, you know, we're not plugging our companies or anything, but I really do think that it was such a shock to me that for at least a year when I started to see all the lack of accountability, the lack of tools to help agents and agencies be on top of their businesses, because really your revenue and your reporting is the foundation of your business. I just kept thinking like, this is a me problem, right? I'm ignorant. I just jumped in here without any mentor or anything like that. And there's things I'm missing. What was scary was that after five, six, 8 months, I realized that, oh, everyone has this problem. Like, this isn't a me thing. This is like accepted. And people were saying things like, this is the cost of doing business. Oh, this is just the way it is. And it was almost accepted. Like, it bothered me that people weren't bothered by it. And me, I'm just, like I said, very outgoing person, you know, very close with my friends. I have like a friend group that's like family. And I would just consistently with rage complain about this and saying, I'm going to do something about this one day. I'm going to do something about this one day. My initial idea was really to bring factoring to the travel industry. So factoring is like an advancement on a receivable. So basically in apparel or in wholesale industries, like let's say you get $500,000 order from Macy's, you need to now go produce the goods. A factoring company, they'll see that purchase order, they'll front you the money, and then they'll take a cut of it and they'll collect it, you know, because with those purchase orders, these department stores, they're not paying until like 30 to 60 days after shipment. So you need that money to go.
Does essentially the same thing. Travel advisors, you know, you're basically having all this work done. You put in hours and hours and hours of work, but that's a trip that's still 5, 6, maybe even 12 months away. Then the trip not only then has to happen, but then you what? It depends. I think sometimes it can be up to like 3 months after a trip
Correct.
Returns, where Yep. that's when the supplier is going to pay your commissions. You are potentially waiting up to a year to get any money for all of the work that you did a year prior. So correct. That's the context to the problem that you're talking about.
And not only that, things could change without you knowing about that. All you know is what happened at the time of booking. So it's right. only after something is 3-4 months delinquent that you even, well, and again, before Sion, and now thankfully Sion was like somewhat revolutionary. And now even if Sion's not your cup of tea, there's other options out there that people are using. But at least finally we started something, whatever system you use, where we brought attention to the problem. And now there's people who are now aware of this in advance, because a lot of times people didn't even care to know the details because, yeah, if you ask an agent, do you want to get paid faster? They'll say yes. But if you told them you're going to get paid with the same sort of latency that you do now, but well in advance, you'll know that at least the day you're getting paid and how much exactly is coming in. It is just, we could have a separate podcast that just about the, you know, the problems with commissions. But the initial question was what made me start this. So I guess I'm rambling on, but basically I spoke about this for years. I had thankfully a successful growing business that required my full attention. And I was a one-man show for a lot of that time. And really, one of my lifelong best friends, who you know, Alphonse, my better half, he exited a business. And even though one of my best friends spoke to him all the time, never saw him during the day during working hours, walked into my office one morning. I'm like, what are you doing here? He literally walked into my office and he put a one-page business plan on my desk. He said, you've been talking about it for years. I always thought you were exaggerating. I did my own research the past month, and it's worse than you even explained it. If we go 50-50 partners, I'll help you get this off the ground. And I wasn't loving the 50-50 partner idea, but once we got past that, and thank God we did that, once we got past that, within, I would say, 6 months, I was doing it full time. We had so much interest. We had so much excitement. And it sort of happened. It wasn't even planned. It was almost like, all right, this guy, Alphonse, wants to go spin his wheels a little bit. But he kept doing sort of the same stuff he does now, just making stuff happen, just being sort of that anchor. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, there'd be definitely no Sion.
I don't even think I knew that story. So that's incredible. Credit to Alphonse.
And no hyperbole. No hyperbole there. It's like literally exactly what happened.
Yeah, the two of you aren't capable of that. You're both pretty straight shooters. So I appreciate it. That's awesome. Yeah. I have no idea. I am curious because I know you, and we had talked previously about both IBC and of course Sion. You mentioned that you have no experience in the industry. And when I talked to you about this previously, you had said that a lot of it was based off of gut instinct for you. And yep. I'm curious what gave you the confidence to trust it. Because similarly, I operate pretty much entirely off of gut instinct a lot of the time. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of the time it's informed gut instinct. So I'm not just making rash decisions. But a good amount of the business, I know what I'm going to do before you're even done asking me a question. Because a lot of times I know so starkly which direction I'm going to go. So yep. Did you hone that? Did you find that at UPW? Where did that come from?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think I've always been, I don't know why, but I've always been a bit of like a risk taker and a gambler, as you may or may not know. But, you know,
maybe
I like...
It happens at Virtuoso Travel Week in Vegas. Days of Virtuoso Travel Week in Vegas.
Exactly. I just needed to... I know we had some fun times, so I just wanted to put that nugget out there. But yeah, I think I've naturally always been a risk taker. You know, I definitely... Some of it could have come at a young age from some bad influences in my life, that's for sure. But I think Tony Robbins definitely helped that whole concept of burning the boats and realizing that if you don't make it happen, no one else is going to make it happen. And believe it or not, no matter how little confidence you have in yourself, you're capable. So it's really just giving you, because what happens is once you start, it's so many good examples in life are like working out, is that like once you do something you didn't think or something that you see a result from, it's sort of like a snowball effect, right? And I think, I think a lot of times when I was younger, and I know you said like specific examples are great, and I'll try to think of one, but I just remember a feeling growing up that, you know, always giving people more credit than they deserved, right? Either believing people, believing the hype, thinking other people were better than me. And then from whatever specific experiences it was, either me gaining more confidence in myself as I got older with very pragmatic approaches and going through certain experiences where I took, maybe I'm not a genius or a Harvard grad, but just through street smarts and applying common sense to things, getting the same results or even better results than people with all the flash or the fancy words. You know me, I'm much more like off the cuff. I think seeing that from my own confidence and also, I guess, seeing over time how full of shit people were and really like, don't judge a book by its cover. Usually when people use that phrase, it's that like, don't judge them in a bad way, but also don't always judge people in the most positive way or give people too much credit. Like, oh, they're so successful. They know so much. They're such an expert. It's like that leads to having more confidence in yourself. But yes, the simple answer to your question is, yeah, I've always been someone who felt like I had a good intuition. And I trust myself and that gut more than I do other people and sometimes facts for better or worse.
I have my own example from, we've had a conversation about this and I just remembered it just now. We were at LA Miami, which is a conference in obviously Miami that happens every year. I think it was both of our first time at this conference and we were in this like specific CEO track of the event where like most people are doing like the trade show side and we were doing more of like a executive track. And I remember the whole time I was there to try to get connections with all of these business owners. And I, you know, as I usually do, confided in you pretty early on. And I was like, I'm so nervous to talk to all these hotel owners or, you know, executives at these companies, because at the time, Lucia was still very, very early on. And I was so nervous that whole trip. And I remember you saying to me, they're just people. First of all, they're just people. And even more than that, a lot of times, like, they don't even know what the hell they're talking about, you know, and you just made it so obvious that most of the people in here have probably, you know, maybe years and years and decades of experience, but it doesn't mean that they're any more, you know, put on a pedestal than you.
And
there were some people that like I'd point out and you'd give context to who they are and like their business. And basically you just have to lower everyone down to like a normal level for me in my brain. And I realized ever since then, now before I am worried about talking to anyone in particular person, I'm just like, they're just a person. Like they, you know.
I'm so happy that helped you. That makes me feel so good. And it actually does, again, I'm sorry it's not a specific example, but I will say that I think I naturally, whether intentional or not, both in the agency business and at Sion, you end up consulting people a lot and being on the phone with customers and you realize how many people need help. So obviously with Sion, I've spent so much time with IC speaking one-on-one. And I think one of the best advice that I, at least in my opinion, that I think I give the ICs on a regular basis is like, think for yourself. Like, it's almost like it took me about a year, which I think was a quick, most people it's longer than that, to realize that like, oh, you're scared to like step on any toes. It's like, ooh, I have to represent my host agency well, or I'm not a real company. I'm just an IC. And I can't talk to a GM. And it's like, you need to break that thinking. You need something for your client. You call someone who can help your client. Like, don't overcomplicate it. Like, it's sort of similar to what you said. Like, they're just people. It's like, you need to start looking at yourself as a business and that you need something and you're going to like, when you go get it, like it's not such a, like, don't overcomplicate things. And I think that's one of the things that I think, I'll be honest, I don't even know if it was intentional when we built Sion, but one of the things people subconsciously love about our product is it takes this huge community of ICs that are the backbone of all this growth in the luxury leisure space. And it changes their mindset just in the way we designed it. And I'm not even taking credit that this was intentional, that all of a sudden they feel like businesses from sort of like, not that everyone looks at themselves like a side job, that's maybe a little hyperbole, but like, it's almost like overnight they log into Sion now instead of their Excel sheet or something, and like, whoa, they're taking themselves a lot more seriously. Immediately, just because of the way the data is presented them, they feel more in control, peace of mind. Now they can scale and now they can
have data. Before, like you said, it was an Excel, but I mean, most advisors, they were not using Excel in the way that, you know, my husband is doing Excel modeling all day long. Like, no travel advisors like sitting down and making models of their business. This is truly like, they were just saying, did I get paid yet on this commission? Now you can not only see when you're going to, like, what you're going to get paid, but when you can almost forecast from there. Like,
correct.
It's incredible. But 100%. Now you actually have data, which before wasn't even like it was bad data, just there wasn't any.
Right. The most simple first steps go a long way. So I think that was important. And by the way, I'm not just saying this because you spoke about Ali and how, I had a positive impact, but I don't think people realize how young you are, but like you've had an amazing impact on me too. And even just before, like I really hate public speaking. Podcasts is something that I don't get as nervous for because it's more conversational, especially with someone I know like you, even though I was still nervous. But even I was just telling Alphonse about it, like, oh, you know, I have like a little pit in my stomach. I just hate this stuff, you know? And we were talking, just your name came up, and it's like really not only the, I guess if I could say the balls you have or how assertive you are, but just the confidence you have when you're on stage. You're the opposite of me. I get on stage. I've had moments where I blacked out and just like, that's where you shine. You might be like, Irving, I'm so nervous or I can't this. And you might tell me that offline. The lights go on and you're just like, you almost black out in a good way. Like, you know, like Will Ferrell in Old School, where it's just like, it's ridiculous. And I think just watching you from also a marketing standpoint, knowing how, you know, even if it's all not figured out behind the scenes yet, like you could just have an idea and you're already marketing, getting people excited, getting that feedback. And what you are great at is probably what I'm least great at. So I always looked at you as like, I wish I had what Grace had. So I just want you to know that.
First of all, thank you. You don't need to hype me up like that, but I appreciate
it. No, it's the truth.
The truth is that I'm doing exactly the same thing that you're talking about, which is don't overcomplicate it. And I think when it comes to things like, for example, this podcast, it was every marketing move we've ever made, it credits to my dad. And it's probably because he did it in his florist business. I've talked about my dad's florist 1,000 times and I will never shut up about it because everyone overcomplicates everything. And the same thing that we're doing is exactly the same thing that my dad's florist has always done. And every business idea has been tied to either something he did do or something he wants to do, but doesn't necessarily pertain to his company.
Right.
And so when it comes to marketing with us, I've always said the same thing to you, which is, first of all, don't overcomplicate it. And just execute it. I mean, when we were talking about fundraising, you'd give me advice of like, just email the person. Like, why are you overcomplicating it? Like, just talk to them and ask them for the money, you know, like ask them for the investment. Same thing here. It was like, you know what you need to do to actually market the business. Why aren't you doing it? And we found, for example, I've known for years that Lucia needs to start doing email marketing. We've done like random emails once a month here and there, and we've never had like true email campaigns. And it took my dad actually sitting me down and saying like, why aren't you doing this? Like, it would literally take you like 2 weeks to put this together. Like, why are you ever complicating this? Well, I don't have the content for it. I don't have the time to write all that copy. He's like, go hire one of your co-pilots on Lucia and just build it out. It'll take 2 weeks and just launch it and stop overthinking. And I think that mindset that you bring to the table, so many people, every single founder I've ever met, except for the truly exceptional ones, overthink everything. And it's nothing is that serious or that complicated.
I agree. Nothing. Very and well said. Your dad's the man.
Yeah, the personality, I'm nervous what people are going to think. I'm nervous how people are going to react. Who cares?
Yep.
Same thing as you said, like 5 years from now, do you want to see yourself in that new position of your business or not?
Correct. Yeah, it's not just going to happen.
It won't just happen. You won't wake up and it won't be changed. Well, getting away from me, getting away from my dad's business, even though I too could talk about that forever. Again, probably tied back to everything you learned at Tony Robbins Seminar. But I want to talk about actually someone on your side of your family, because when I asked you about who's someone that's very important to you, an important mentor, you said your mom. And I want to know specifically why, because you clearly have, you know, so many wonderful things to say, but I want to know why she's been that great mentor to you.
For sure. And after you asked me that, I was also thinking about sort of like, obviously, you know, a lot of my personality, for better or worse, because I'm a strong believer that everything has good and bad elements to it. Nothing's only good. Nothing's only bad. But I think so much has come from both my parents. I think my mom, you know, first off, she's just like an amazing woman. I think she's very inspiring that she, you know, she was an immigrant. She came here literally on a boat from Lebanon when she was like 16 years old, worked from the ground up, you know, the whole story, and, you know, just became so successful. But I think seeing her growing up, her personality, what I always saw was my mom took care of everybody. Old school, you know, just, it wasn't just me and my brother and my sister and my dad, but it was her parents. She was like the youngest in her family and took care of her siblings, took care of her parents, anything they needed. And then later when they were sick and anything like that, and even any business that my mom had, she was an interior decorator. She's one of the best caterers in the tri-state area right now. My mom's a pretty big deal right now. She did party planning, anything that my mom did, you always saw, and this is why I say bad also. I mean, she did it to her, the detriment of her health. Like my mom would go all in on something and then she'll be like bedridden for like 24, 48 hours, like literally took every ounce of energy out of her body. But just seeing how, like, I never saw her do anything for herself, like, you know, and again, that's not good too. So I needed to learn some life balance lessons over the years, but I think that was a huge part of me caring. And I know this isn't part of your question, but this goes for any business, but especially assuming most of your listeners are in travel. Whether you're first starting out or you've been in the business 10, 20 years plus, there's people 40, 50 years, I'm sure, listening. At some point, you're going to, if it's a full-time job, you care about it, you're ambitious. At some point, everyone's going to have the same resources, know the same people, know how things work, etc. In any service industry, I'm talking about travel now, but it's really any service business. What separates bad from good or good to great is how much you care. I truly believe that. Like that's it. That is the thing. And I think that's what made our travel business separate from the others, even though some others might have had better travel agents than us. It's like, do you care even more than the person traveling? And I got that from my mom. And I think that's why, you know, our business grew. I think that's why Sion's customers, I feel like we have an army of supporters with us, is because we try to make everyone feel like they're our only customer and that we have a whole team of people working just for that one person. You know, and even though it's a little, you know, unattainable in reality, but that is what we strive for, is, and I get that definitely from my mom. I'm just a worrier. I care about everyone else. I worry about me later, but they have a problem about, yes, of course it's Saturday and night and it could wait till Monday that someone had a tiny bug or there's this little problem on an invoice or whatever the case is. But, you know, it's not acceptable. Like the people come first. So that from my mom. And I also mentioned my dad. I think obviously that was something I always saw from my mom. I was around her more than my dad. Obviously he's working all day, et cetera. One of the things that I love about my dad is he always set the best example for me, my brother and my sister. And I think this goes with the caring, is just how to treat people. It's like, as much as my mom cared, my mom also has a little psycho in her. You know, she's old school. She's, you know, she's the best. She's nuts, but in the best way possible. My dad.
You're from Jersey, right?
Yeah. Well, New York. I live in Jersey now. Yeah. But I was born and raised in New York.
No, all the same thing. We love our New York moms. Same.
Yeah, for sure. So, but my dad just was always treated people with respect, never took advantage of people, never tried to get away with something or say, so like just from a moral standpoint. And I think that combined with caring is that people could trust you, that, like I said, when you asked me about myself, about being a nice person or being happy, it's like, put a smile on, say please, say thank you. These small things go such a long way. Treating people with respect, not having prejudice, not being, you know, anything, like just everyone's equal, that type of like thinking, I think is something I always take for granted. And I'm like, when you see people who aren't like that, you're just like, wow, like who raised you? But like, you know, people did raise me and they deserve credit for that. And I always try to treat people nice. I think that's a very simple thing to say, but it's not as common as you think.
No, I couldn't agree more. Your intensity then, does that mostly come from your mom or your dad?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely my mom. That's
now, the story that I want to ask you about is I found out that you sold your watch once to pay rent. Can you tell me, like, where in the context of your early business came from?
Yeah, well, for sure. That was when I was sort of moving from when I basically started my travel business. So just to paint the picture, I just got married, come from like a traditional community, you know, got to do my duties as a husband, you know, take care of everything I got to do. Just got a one bedroom apartment in Manhattan. I'm sure, you know, it's expensive rent, a lot of responsibilities, and, you know, making a good living, comfortable, safe, you know, like everything. And then all of a sudden, I make this change. And obviously, who'd I do? I spoke to mentors, spoke to my grandparents, spoke to my parents, spoke to my in-laws. Imagine, I'm just trying to paint the picture. Every single person I spoke with told me, you're the biggest idiot. You cannot do this. It's irresponsible. You have a wife. You have a responsibility. You have all this stuff. You can't do this. You're not going to be successful. There's no money in that. Just imagine how much negative energy that I got. But, you know, I'm coming off Tony Robbins, literally floating in air. No one's going to tell me not to. I know I can do it, all this stuff. So I'm riding high, and I just did it. So I also, like, from a competitive standpoint, like, I won't let someone tell me that I failed or they were right. So obviously it takes time. Thank you for helping out before talking about how long it takes to get travel commissions, right? Like, so being that some didn't come in, it took forever. You know, there was like a few month period where it was really tight. Like, there were some other times where I was a little short, you know, maybe I could ask my parents for a little help here or this, that. This was like, you know, and again, I had like serious rent in the city, and it was like, this is like not a number I could ask or I could float or I could put on a credit card or do some maneuver that I'm used to doing to sort of get by. So, yeah, I just said I had a really nice graduation gift from my parents when I was younger. I had a watch, and it killed me, but I didn't even think twice about it. Like, obviously in the beginning I was like, is that even an option? But then the second it hit me, I'm like, dude, I don't give a shit about the watch. Like, there's no way I'm going to let people say I told you so. And I think that was something that I look back and I love that story, actually, because it shows that, you know, just because, you know, everyone could say all these motivational things and these TikToks, like, oh, you put your mind to it, you could do it. But it doesn't mean it's easy. You got to be willing to really sacrifice. And that was something, even though in the grand scheme of things, a materialistic item like a watch, yeah, big shit. You know, it's not like I sold my my arm or something. But at the end of the day, I sold my watch, paid my rent that month, and then sort of, I guess, you know, good things happened after that. Maybe God saw that I'm willing to, you know, make these sacrifices, that it mattered that much to me, and then a lot of really good things happened after that. So, yeah.
I would say, to take it a step further, though, I think you, like you already said, most people say that they're willing to work really hard for something. It takes another level of dedication to actually execute when it's really hard, like, can't make rent hard, or don't earn money for groceries hard. And I remember there were so many moments when the pandemic hit for us where there was no more money at all. And similarly, couldn't pay rent, things like that. And I think most people would look at your situation and immediately just go and get a different job and call it a day. And that's completely fine. And there's nothing wrong about that. But I'm a specific kind of person where I attract psychos like you, and because that's who I am as well. And we're speaking to other people out there that want to be that kind of person. And so I resonate really well with that, because I think very few people are willing to commit to that level of commitment.
I gravitate to the psychos also. And by the way, just so you know, it wasn't just that. Like, at that time, and I think, you know, I did some crazy stuff to get the business off the ground. Like, that was one example. But I was so, the thing is, if you know what it takes to start something, you wouldn't do it. So I think you'll never know what you're capable of unless you do something. And I think I think one of the number one advice, and by the way, I hate even talking like that. Like I'm some like successful person. Like I'm, you know, in a startup, you know, where, you know, working really hard. We have big goals ahead of us that we haven't achieved. But so that's why I really appreciate you bringing me on, like even thinking that people could learn things or be inspired from me. So I appreciate it. But I know that regardless of whether or not I'm successful, not successful, like I've had fun, which is success. You know, I've had the opportunity to do some awesome stuff. And I think in order to do that, the best advice that I could give someone is really to just start. I think that is the hardest thing that people deal with, is to just start. Because if you know what you're getting into, it wouldn't happen. You would never do it because it makes no sense. So many people say like, oh, I have this plan to do something I've always loved. And when the stars align, I'm going to do it. Newsflash, the stars are never going to align. You need to make them align. You need to smash them to get them to where you need to be. And there is no other way. And I truly believe that. That's the only way to make it happen. Like for instance, even, you know, when I was starting out, like I said, I mentioned that my social life was really important to me. So yeah, newsflash, I went out a lot, you know? And so I used to, you know, in Manhattan, we had a lot of connections, et cetera. I used to go because, you know, I targeted, again, it was a membership. People couldn't just book travel with me. So I, you know, we were working with really high net worth individuals, celebrities, entertainers, et cetera. So I would go to all the hottest restaurants in Manhattan, all the people I knew who worked there, the managers, the nightclubs, the doormen, the promoters, all these people at the hottest nightclubs. And I would tell them, you know, if, you know, a celebrity shows up, a basketball player, a football player, et cetera, just text me and I'm going to come. And I would be in bed with my wife 12:30 on a weeknight, get a text, go downstairs, hop in a taxi or subway, go downtown, and walk in and just literally just walk up to people, cold cock them, just like walk up. Hey, I'm Irving. Nice to meet you. And you wouldn't believe like people who are, you know, like really like famous people. Like I would walk up to them and just introduce myself. And just the fact that I had the balls to do that, for the edited version, for the guts to do that. You don't know how many clients I landed like that. And then obviously, you know, by doing well by them, things grew on its own.
No, I have the similar story when, you know, I started originally when I was in college and I would sit in the Cornell has in their hotel school, a literal hotel. And so they, as a result, a lobby bar. And I would sit there and introduce myself to alumni that would walk in and I would like ask the bartender who just walked in and I'd Google them and like, were they an important alumni or something? Like, why were they there? Were they a speaker? And I remember a woman named Anna Brandt had come and spoken to our like luxury marketing class. And she was at the time, I'm going to butcher her title, but basically she was the head of like guest experience for the Dorchester collection. And it came to the point where like, now Anna and I can just call on each other for anything. And like, she's now at the Wynn, like as director of like all of like guest experience at the Wynn. And it's like, you know, an incredible, incredible job. And I'm just some lonely person in her phone book that probably can't ever do anything for her. But, you know, the point being is like, I would just walk up to people that showed up at Cornell and I just walked up to her and I was like, do you have anyone to go to lunch with today? She's like, no, I was just going to go to lunch. And I was like, great, let me buy you lunch.
That's wild.
But like you do crazy things like that. And now, you know, you just said a few moments ago, like, there are so many people that don't realize you need to not just like wait for the stars to align, but like smash them and make them align. And there are so many moments, even today, I think I'm a pretty extreme person even today, but I'll use Max.
Compulsive.
I don't know if I'm like, no, I'm probably, maybe not so much compulsive, but just extremely intense. Is that right? Fair? Is
it like yes.
Similar parallel. But Max will literally find time that doesn't exist to do the things that are important and prioritized to him. And I think you're very similar in that same way, that if you live by those priorities, literally nothing will stand in your way. So I think you hold those similar values.
Yep, I agree fully. And I'm sure you've had experiences too. Another thing that goes hand in hand with that is if you always look back, there's always, you know, the stories like the watch and like those moments that you remember that I just went above and beyond. But there's also people, it's always easier to forget the like angels in your life who've helped you.
Yeah.
And I need to almost any time I'm speaking to anyone publicly like this, I'll never let myself not mention a man named Rene Rofe. He's the owner of a company called International Intimates. They basically make everything for Victoria's Secret, right? They're a huge company. And that was sort of my last stop working before I started my travel agency. Working for his company. I wasn't selling lingerie, but I was selling. He had like a baby division for like Leia and things like that. And I went to him and he saw that like I wasn't like I was going into these meetings with these big companies and like I could care less if they bought what I was put a t-shirt on the rack, right? Like I could not care less. Bottom line is I went to him and I told him, listen, you know, I want to start this company, etc. He came to me and said, no problem. So this is what we're going to do for the next 3 months. You're going to continue to get a paycheck and you don't need to come to the office. If you do come to the office, you have a desk and you can use that same desk that you're working now to work on your new business. So huge gift. That got me through at least the first hard 3 months. I assume if he didn't do that, I would have had to sell a lot more than my watch. So, you know, there's always people and there's much more than just him in terms of people who've, you know, helped me, given me a break. So I also believe a lot of good things happen when you help people. And I think that's important also to always try to like help people. And I don't need to tell you that. I mean, I see you have no grace time. Everything is, you know, whether it's something you need for your business or for someone else. So, but I just hope anyone listening hears that too, is that like, don't worry, it'll come back tenfold. Just help people.
So true though. Truly. Any meeting you have, anytime you help someone, don't expect anything in return.
That's it.
You'll just be amazed when it actually does. But don't do it with the expectation. I couldn't agree more. I'm, you know, conscious of all of the conversations that we've had, talk a lot about looking into the future of, you know, how to be a better person in the future and how to improve yourself and your business in the future, et cetera. Sure. But I can't help but think about the failures that also impact and make you who you are now. I don't think you'd look back on like selling your watch, for example, as a failure. And
none
of those things are failures per se. I would ask though that, do you have a favorite failure that you genuinely feel like is something that you maybe do consider a failure, but was something you really look back on?
I have something specific to share. I do think that in general, first I'll give the cliche answer is that like things are cliche for a reason. I realized that when I went to Hawaii and it was awesome. I was like, yeah, the reason why, you know, Hawaii is cliche is because it's great. Yeah. I mean, as long as it doesn't absolutely knock you out of any game completely in personal life or in business, like all failures are good, right? Because you're going to learn something from it. You'll apply it. All right. That's the stock answer. But a specific failure that I learned a lot from was my travel agency was getting some notoriety as it was growing. And I was approached by a successful businessman, great guy, by the way, Alan Mala, who owned, I don't know if you ever saw it, but there was a really high-end magazine called Man of the World. They had Tom Brady on the cover, these famous actors, all this stuff. It was just like a really high-end magazine, lifestyle brand. They had a retail online store, etc. Bottom line is he asked to partner with me. Me, it was like the first time I ever had success doing anything on my own in my life. I was like, oh my God. And he offered like, you know, sort of a good financial package also. So, and spoke about all this opportunity, etc. So right when I saw sort of like, not an easy way out, but just a way to like, oh, someone acknowledges success or something. It's like, oh, I'm going to do it. And I didn't, it's not that it was a bad move. It ended up being a bad move, but it was that the way I approached it, I learned so much from it. Because looking back, I think what I learned from that is you really need to make sure when you're making big decisions in life that you're looking at the right things. And whether it's, you know, the vision being aligned, having the details worked out. So many people get excited about the headline and you're like, but how is it actually going to work? What is going to change? What is your expectation? What is that? So I guess it's a particular lesson when it comes to partnerships, but I think in Sion, we have these opportunities all the time. Partnerships, mergers, you know, even with clients, a lot of times when we're bringing on customers, they're sort of like partners also. And it's just, I learned so much about how to sort of scope out a situation, right? And what to look for, what not to look for, and not to make a decision out of excitement, right? That's different than what we were talking about before, and we were talking about a gut instinct. The gut instinct is an intuition, but don't just make something better than it is just because it's something, you know, don't lie to yourself and be able to, you know, critically break something down before making such a big decision like that. Thankfully, we were able to part ways amicably. He had success. I got my company back. Everything worked out. But, you know, it definitely was scary at the time.
Yeah. And I think it's closely tied to don't overhype someone, like a specific person. Don't have partnership either. I've done it so many times.
Yep, for sure. Sometimes people care more about sounding like they're asking the right questions than actually asking the right question.
Yeah, 100% true. Well, Irving, I really, really always enjoy talking to you, mostly because I get to ask your advice on everything, including now. So I appreciate you so much taking the time to chat with me, but also share this with everyone else that might be listening and taking some time to let us into your crazy brain.
I felt like we were just talking. I had fun. Might as well let everyone else hear what I think I know.